Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. How is everyone today? Of course, we love your input on this program. Lots to get through today, including intellectual property issues surrounding cultural heritage. It sounds like a weighty topic, and it is. To walk us through what it means, I'm joined by SFU archaeologist George Nichols and Kelly Bannister from a group called iPinch. We'll find out what that is as well. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
George, let's start with you. Let's first describe for people, remind us what intellectual property is.
Well, intellectual property is basically creations of the mind, as it's usually termed. And this could be songs and stories and designs. We usually in Western society think about intellectual property as who has rights to publish books or music and may receive patents for, certain kinds of inventions and so on. But in the realm of cultural heritage, it gets much trickier because much of what we're dealing with in terms of cultural heritage, such as traditional designs of our artistic expression or rock art and so on, are all creations of the mind, but don't fall under the realm of Western law, so to speak. And a really important point to recognize here is that, you know, when we're talking about artifacts, when we're talking about heritage sites or anything like that, none of that has any meaning without the intellectual the intellectual values, the intangible heritage that we endow them with.
So that gets to me very tricky. And how do you decide which areas you can deem that people would have intellectual property rights to in terms of First Nations cultures, for example?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's the decision is that of the host community, the host, or rather the source community, that is, whose creation is it? And it's not just always the individual who's the creator of these traditional images, because we're often dealing with communal ownership in traditional societies and indigenous societies. And they really have the equivalent of what we are familiar with in Western society. So in other words, traditional masks may be owned by a family or clan. Songs may be owned by a family or clan. And others have to have permission to use them. And those stories, those masks and so on may be given as gifts, or they may be otherwise obtained by outsiders with permission. But that's the whole point here, is that, unless, descendant communities, in this case, indigenous peoples, have control over their heritage, unless they have the right to and ability to say, this is something that we would like to share with you, then the use of their heritage without permission is generally unwelcome. It could be harmful economically or culturally or in terms of their worldview or religious values.
So how do we go about making that connection, ensuring that intellectual property rights are given to the people who rightfully should have them?
Well, I mean, basically it comes down to asking. It comes down to finding out what their values are. It comes down to having a conversation with them. And it comes down to, in the case of researchers interested in this topic, developing relationships with these communities, with these people, to better understand what their values are, what their concerns are, how and why do intellectual property issues emerge. In terms of why is a group upset when a company seeks to market a T-shirt with a traditional design taken from one of their rock art images? I mean, why is the community upset? Well, there are some reasons, some real legitimate, very important reasons that the community is upset, and just a matter of finding out those reasons. And it may be, for example, that with some rock art images, it's not simply here's a traditional design, but for people in that culture, there is a spiritual being that's in that image, regardless of wherever that image and in whatever form that image is presented in. So there are some really important issues here.
Yeah, and complex. So if you discover then that in fact there is a lot of connection, being it spiritual or otherwise, and say a big corporation comes in and wants to use that imagery, what can be done to protect it?
Well, I mean, generally comes down to most people want to do the right thing, whether it's individuals or corporations. But too often, indigenous intellectual property is seen as public domain. We are all so familiar with images of Indians from Hollywood and in the popular imagination that we don't even think that, you know, there is a much bigger set of stakeholders out there, that is the indigenous peoples themselves, who have concerns about such things as these. So, you know, there are cases where legal cases have gone to trial to restrict or prevent the use of traditional images on commercial products. But on the other hand, you know, many indigenous peoples are seeking to enter the marketplace with their creations, which may incorporate traditional designs. And in fact, if you go to, you know, any airport gift shop or, you know, gift shops in general, you'll find, you know, dozens or literally hundreds of products that are, you know, First Nations
motifs,
images,
in the
or Nookshook,
yeah,
or, you know, tea towels with Northwest Coast designs on them. And, you know, here the challenge for the consumer is to figure out, you know, which ones are made in China, which ones are, you know, made locally with First Nations input or control over, and, you know, are the artists are and their families acknowledged? Are they the beneficiaries and initiators of these products?
And if that's determined, are they compensated, or how do you work that out?
Well, I mean, in terms of, you know, these kinds of objects in gift shops, you know, again, it's wide open. In some cases, the indigenous person or persons are the recipients of the economic benefits because they have designed, they in fact may have marketed or co-marketed their images. So there's a wide benefit that comes to the community, via the individual or the collective. In other cases, a Northwest Coast design may be obtained legally or leased by or bought by, the rights bought by, a company to market something where the artist receives a small percentage, but, you know, the company itself receives the majority. And in fact, some of those objects or tea towels or refrigerator magnets may be made in China. So, you know, there's a huge spectrum of benefits in terms of, in some cases, the First Nations have absolutely no benefits coming in economically or recognition of their heritage. And in other cases, the First Nations are the primary beneficiaries and have control over the products and the process.
Mm-hmm. So your work studies this issue, or does it seek to find a solution to the people whose cultural heritage is being used and they're not sort of benefiting as they may well if they spoke up and said, this is our material?
Well, that's really, you know, the heart of and the origins of the IPINCH project, which is the Intellectual Property Issues and Cultural Heritage Project that you mentioned at the beginning of the show. And Kelly and I and one of our close colleagues, Julie Hollowell, developed this in about 10 years ago, the idea of this. And it stemmed from the idea that, you know, we were recognizing in many different contexts that indigenous heritage was often being appropriated, commodified by others, mm-hmm, with very little benefits, very little recognition, very little control going to, you know, the source community. And so we decided that we had a great opportunity here that could involve many of our colleagues who have had a long history of involvement with First Nations and indigenous peoples around the world to, first of all, study these situations to determine how and why and in what context these issues, these problems develop, to look to generate good practices by which these issues can be avoided or resolved, and to also serve as a clearinghouse, serve as a resource center to inform communities and policymakers and consumers in general as to, you know, what these issues are.
And the origins of these things. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will bring in Kelly Bannister from iPinch. She's with the steering committee. And, of course, hear more from George Nicholas. He's an SFU archaeologist. Stay with us. Hi, this is CFAX 1070. I'm Pamela McCall. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about intellectual property issues surrounding cultural heritage. On the line with me is George Nicholas. He's an SFU archaeologist. And Kelly Bannister. She's with the iPinch Steering Committee member. Kelly, let's bring you in. Remind us what iPinch stands for.
iPinch is Intellectual Property Issues in Cultural Heritage.
Mm-hmm. And you, formed this with George in order to do what?
Well, you know, it's a great story how this came to be, and George and I were just musing about that. I come from a different background, not archaeology. I come from an area called ethnobiology, which is more about how people interrelate with the biological world. And this all started because we were looking at issues that were arising in my PhD research at the time of biopiracy, or when there's traditional knowledge related to plants and the biological mm-hmm. world that's being perhaps taken and appropriated and commodified by biotech or pharmaceutical companies. And what we saw was there was a very interesting crossover in the kinds of issues, different subject matter, but the same kinds of issues happening in archaeology and in the area of cultural heritage.
Right. And you've just received an award of some sort, George. Tell us about that.
Yes. In fact, I was in Montreal yesterday to pick this up. One of the primary funders of science and social science in Canada is the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. And this year they have developed a new series of awards for innovative and leading research, and we were fortunate to receive what's called the Partnership Award. And this is in recognition of the kind of collaborative research that we are doing that empowers and protects Indigenous communities while also enriching scientific and scholarly research.
How does it actually, let's get into the nitty-gritty here of how it actually protects cultural heritage.
Well, one of the things that we're doing with iPinch is that we are working directly with Indigenous communities around the world. And these are communities with whom many of us have had a long relationship at the very start of the iPinch project, and communities that had a variety of different kinds of concerns about how their property was being protected or not under existing heritage legislation, okay. or were concerned about the inappropriate or harmful use of it by others. So these communities, about 15 in total, co-developed a research plan that would bring together community members as well as members of our scholarly team. We have about a team of 50 that include archaeologists and ethicists and lawyers and museum specialists and many, many others. So the community would be working with some of these individuals to develop a project that would address their specific needs. The research would be conducted with and by the community. The results of that research, whether on cultural tourism or on sustainable heritage education and sharing, or developing policies to study human remains, and so on, the results of those of that research would then be reviewed by the community to ensure that no secret information, no culturally sensitive information would be released to the iPinch team. And then the iPinch team itself would do our scholarly analysis of this. And what is so important about this strategy, and really what's so unusual about it, is that from the very start, we have worked with these communities in full and equal partnership. And in fact, I mean, and this is part of what we received the Partnership Award from SHRC, is that we have put communities in the driver's seat of the research process.
So what at the end of the day, with all the research and all the collaboration, what does this mean for people in terms of ensuring that their intellectual property, what they deem to be theirs surrounding cultural heritage, is insured?
Well, I mean, there's no guarantee that, you know, we can or anyone can ever have full protection of any aspect of their intellectual or material cultural property.
Can they go? Can they through legal means? Can they try to establish that?
Well, there are some degrees of legal protection, but what is far more effective is being, having effective research policies and effective and fair use policies before these issues ever arise. Rather than trying to repair the damage, after a product has entered the marketplace and communities have lost complete control over it. So by taking a more proactive approach, everyone is much more satisfied in the end, and the protection works at a much deeper and more effective level.
And how is it protected then? If it doesn't happen through legal means, everyone's come together and decided what is their sustainable heritage and the like. How do they then go through that means other than identifying it to ensure that it's theirs?
Well, again, there's not a cookbook recipe for this. What we are trying to do is in part educate the public as to what is acceptable, good or fair use, and to educate policymakers. And that is where we see us having an impact in the long run.
I think as well, if I can jump in here, as George said, education is really a key. And as you said earlier, we tend to believe that most people want to do the right thing, but they don't necessarily know what that is. So helping to tease apart those issues and, in fact, creating a platform so many of the issues of concern to the Indigenous communities and Indigenous organizations can get a wider hearing in society is really quite key. We don't know. But once we know about it, we have a chance to do something about it.
So it's recording what is important to Indigenous people, what images and the like, that and music, as you say, that might be used by others, when in fact it's really sacred to these Indigenous cultures, cataloging that per se. Is that what I'm hearing?
In part, but the important point here is that many Indigenous peoples want to share, substantial portions of their culture, whether it's songs and dance, whether it's images and traditional or archaeological sites. But they want to do so in a way that's not harmful to them, not harmful to their religious values. And what they're asking for is really no different than the kinds of legal protections that we have on books I may publish or on work that Kelly does that is then recognized as her property and that she benefits but is also willing to share that knowledge and share that creation with others.
But George, does that not then necessitate having intellectual property rights to that material?
Well, these individuals, these communities have those rights, but those rights are often not recognized.
Not recognized within the Western legal system. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the project, too, that I think is very important to highlight is what we've done is invited a wider understanding of what is intellectual property and looking at some of what is intellectual property. Can be protected in some ways within the Western intellectual property rights system, and much of it cannot. So what are other ways to go about protecting or stewarding or respecting those other kinds of intellectual know-how of Indigenous peoples?
Interesting. So if it doesn't fall into the legal framework of this land, how can it still be protected? And I imagine, as you were saying, if you get some bags or things that are made overseas with images that come from an Indigenous culture and they're not happy with it, that must be a bit of a pickle.
It really is, and I think it really is parallel to, there's due diligence required on the part of the consumer. And it's really parallel to people who might want to purchase something that's environmentally friendly, for example. How do you know? Well, you have to figure out, you have to source it, and you have to find out about, you know, where it was created, mm-hmm. and who did it and who was involved, and then make a decision. It's a moral decision. And it's, I think there's a parallel here with purchasing products that are derived from cultural heritage.
Right, and you two are working towards increasing knowledge of the underpinnings here of what different cultures believe is important to them. And I thank you for trying to spell it out. I wish we had more time. It is complex. Congratulations on your award. I think it's $50,000.
Thank you.
And
we have much more information on this project, including videos on the iPinch website. So I encourage everyone to check that out.
All right, that's iPinch.com?
It's www.sfu.ca/iPinch.
Great. Thanks, George. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
I'm talking
Thanks.
To George Nicholas. He's an SFU archaeologist. And Kelly Bannister, she's with the iPinch Steering Committee.